am the pastor and director of outreach and inclusion at the Vineyard in Springdale, and it's a church of about 7,000 and some change. In addition to that, I also am a consultant for the Key Ministry Foundation based out of Cleveland, and I travel nationally and speak to churches on how they can take their existing ministry models and make them more inclusive for folks who have special needs from cradle to grave. Then I also am on the materials team for the Christian Church Foundation for the Handicapped under the guidance of Jim Pearson, and we'll write some materials for them. So I'm really excited to talk to you guys today about respite. But first, Beth Yost is going to come up and kind of give you guys a testimonial of what her experience has been as a parent receiving respite. So we'll start with that.
I just have a few words to say, not much, but just as a background, I have a daughter, Olivia, who has Down syndrome. And she's now six, but she is my sixth child, so I was already a parent for 14 years before having her. But so I didn't realize how blessed I was until hindsight that this area has the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Cincinnati is really very well developed. And so because my daughter has a very specific condition that is not that rare, I was immediately networked with a lot of support groups. And through that, I had heard about the breathe respite care that Harmony does, and have been blessed to be able to take my kids there a couple times. The bad side is, because life is so busy, and when you then have a special need child added to five other children, life becomes out of control, and it quickly, it's hard to keep track of dates. It's hard to look down the road on the calendar. You're kind of going day to day, and so we miss a lot of them because we're not reminded. It's coming, sign-ups now. We hear it once, then we forget, and then it's done, it's over, we missed it, you know? So that's one thing I would say, if you really, although she has no trouble to fill it up, if you weren't getting the response you needed, people like me need reminders, you know, and hearing it once is not enough. And volunteers are probably the same way, that you probably need to keep it in front of them to get them to remember and sign up. But we've been blessed because, through the Down Syndrome Association, we also were made aware of a group called ARC, which provides some funding for special needs families. And through that funding, it included you could use their vouchers for respite care. And we were additionally blessed. There was a family in our church, and I don't know how, it was just a God thing. He kind of drew me to this couple at our church who I've gotten to know so well over the last 6 years. I didn't really know that well. They just were an older couple who, when we had Olivia, were just very compassionate, very kind. And I said, you know what? Do you think you'd be interested in watching her for me just once a week for a few hours, just for a little break? And they said, yeah, we'd think about that. And at the time, when she was little, she was on a CPAP. So every time a baby naps, you've got the CPAP thing, you know. It was more care than now because she only sleeps at night, you know. So there were different things that they were willing to do, and they actually have a special needs daughter who's now about 36. So, you know, I've learned in the 6 years that they've been taking care of Olivia that they really kind of had a heart for it to begin with, and because they had gone through a lot of it themselves. But they have been a very big blessing for us, and through the ARC, they don't really care whether I pay them or not, but I just like to be able to give back something to them. And so once a week now for almost 6 years, they will take Olivia, and now they'll take her to lunch to play at McDonald's. And they'll take her there and sit with her, let her play, and bring her back. And Carol knows this because they pick her up from preschool once a week. And so she knows them. So we've been blessed with that. Another thing, though, that's happened very recently, because we do have yet another child after her, with seven people and nine in the house, it's things just accumulate with your to-do list, and you're always running people here and there. It's hard to get to all the just daily things that need to be done. And through the study we did this past year with Sweeten Life, they kind of made us think about what help can we receive. And we never really went there before, but it's like kind of pushed us to think what things need to be done that somebody else could do. And so it was kind of funny, but as we got thinking about things we'd never decided before, I got to a place where I'm like, you know what, there's always an ironing board sitting in the corner of my room with bunch of stuff needing to be ironed, and we never get to it, so when we need something, we iron it and wear it, you know, and then it goes back again when it's washed. And it was just one of those things, kind of like, there's a whole myriad of things that need to be done, but that was one of those things that, you know, I'm not that great of an ironer. My husband usually would iron his own shirts because he does a better job than I do, but he's got plenty of work to do. He doesn't need that chore. And it made me think, you know, this is something that I could have. Our Sunday school teacher always has very pressed shirts. I mean, just always, you know, he's got these shirts with these pressed sleeves, and I'm like, I know his wife is a good ironer, and she's a good friend of mine. And it just happened that I approached her, and I said, you know, I've got a proposition for you. She doesn't work out of the side of the home. Her kids are high school now, almost graduating, grown. And I said, you know, I wonder, would you be interested in a small, little part-time job, maybe twice a month, just ironing clothes for me? And she said, you know, I've been looking for an easy little small part-time job because she has a grandchild now, and her son with the grandchild kind of struggling financially, and she'd like to help them, and she'd like to be able to kind of, you know, now that her kids are grown, get a job. And she's like, and you know, it's all better than part-time, what I can pay her, and yet for a couple hours twice a month I'm not really paying very much, and yet that job is taken care of and I no longer have to add that to my list. And when she comes, she does it all. And it's like, you know, then it just slowly accumulates for 2 weeks. She does it all. And it's just such a relief. It's a little thing like that. If you could offer somebody, now there's a lot of jobs that they may not be able to let go control of. You know, there's some things in my house I can't just say, come organize my office. It needs to be done. But I'd have to spend more time telling you what to do than it'd be worth you to come do. But that was something that now, that's a great respite for me to just know when things off my list, and you know, I can usually do other things while she's doing that and have a nice time talking too at the same time. So that's really all I had to share about what we've been able to do.
Not all kinds of junk.
Thank you.
Well, I figured it makes the most sense for Beth to kind of start because it gives you kind of a frame of reference for what is helpful for parents and what has worked, what doesn't work. I love that you use the example of, I would love my office to be organized, but it's twice as much work for you to help me with that. So it will really tie in nicely to some of the stuff that we're going to cover here. This is a program, I will give you a heads up, this is a workshop that normally when I do takes an hour and a half to 2 hours. So if it feels like I'm going a million miles a minute, it's because I am. And so if at any point you feel like I'm covering the material too quickly, just raise your hand, let me know, and I'll slow it down or backtrack. I also really do have ADHD, and part of that means that I speak very fast. I am self-aware, and I just ask the people who I'm speaking to help me out. And again, if I speed up too much, just let me know. And that's one way you can help me be a better presenter. So if I'm being ridiculous, please, by all means, alert me. As we get started, the first thing I want to talk about are respite outreach events. Now, just as a disclaimer, I realize not every church may feel like straight out of the gates they can handle an event-based respite. But part of what I would like to say about that is to keep in mind that sometimes in our minds, we think of event and we think of the Super Bowl. You know, we think of thousands of people, Jesus feeding the masses. An event is just really something where you have scheduled a specific date, a specific time, a specific location, and you've got some parameters around it. So an event-based respite could be as small as 10 children coming to your church and being cared for. Or it could be as big as the largest one that I've ever seen has had 150 kids. And what I would love to make sure everyone understands is that I've been to every size in between, and when it's done well, you really can't tell a difference between an event of 150 and an event of 10, because the way that we structure it is very scalable on purpose, so that as the ministry grows, we don't have to regroup and redo what we do. The first thing I always cover is, where do we begin? Anytime you're doing something this big, it can feel a little overwhelming. So I tell people it's like eating an elephant. You start one bite at a time, and before you know, it's gone. So what our team does at the Vineyard, we have a volunteer team of about 35 people who are really passionate about details and project planning. And when I met these folks, they would have never in a million years, and they would say this to you if they were here today, they would have never pictured themselves being in an inclusion ministry, ever. It was not on their radar. It wasn't something they felt particularly passionate about. But in hindsight, they said it was because it was a blind spot for them. They didn't realize that there was that much of a need. They didn't realize that their skill set could be useful because they weren't professional medical providers or teachers. They were retired engineers, and we have a colonel from the Air Force, and they never made the connection that their skill set could transfer. And so what we did was we came up with this whole framework for brainstorming that when we got together, we literally had a room with a giant marker board, a bunch of markers, some Diet Coke, and some M&Ms, which is all you need to take over the world. And we asked ourselves these questions. What would show the extravagant love of God to the following? Now, we were very careful to choose extravagant love of God because what we wanted to make sure people sensed was when they came and participated in our event, we wanted families and the kids and the volunteers to understand that this is done with a spirit of excellence. We think the families deserve that, and we think God deserves that and asks for that. He wants us to bring our best, to bring our A game. So if we knew right out of the gates that was the expectation we had set, we'd have much better information with how to proceed going forward with what the event would look like. So we looked at what would show the extravagant love of God to the guest, the family, the volunteer, and the vendor. I point out vendor because one thing that we know in America, this is a society based off of capitalism. That's not necessarily a bad thing. So it's supply and demand. And we have a lot of businesses locally who care very much about their city doing well. And maybe the good or service that they provide is not one that they could directly connect to. I'm a plumber. What's a plumber going to offer for respite? Well, we could talk to them about if you have manpower hours, we have families.
I have a leaky sink.
Exactly. We have families who have leaky sinks and could potentially want to do that. If you have employees that you would just like them to have a fun serving opportunity where they could come in an evening and serve together, we can train them for that. Maybe you have a lot of businesses now, obviously with the recession, this is a slightly different climate, but a lot of businesses will have a line item for benevolence that they can donate to something. If you get to them in January before every other Little League team in the world has gotten there, they might have some funding that they want to give you towards the event. So we make sure that we invite them into that. The guest, we first try and define who is the guest. For us at Respite, often that is a child with an identified need, but it's also a sibling, a typical sibling who maybe it wouldn't be on your radar to think that they need something. But I can tell you from personal experience, in my high school years, I was a kid who was considered to be medically fragile. I was an honor student, but through a very odd, God-ordained series of events, I ended up in special education for the 4 years of high school. Those were four very painful years for me emotionally. My disability was the least of my worries. It was my peers who freaked me out. And so for me, I can really relate to that guest who has the identified need, who's feeling like I don't want to be a burden to people. I feel like everybody's labeling me. I'm uncomfortable with certain things, or I can't be around certain things, or I really enjoy these things and nobody's taking the time to ask me. So I can kind of identify with that. My brother, on the other hand, was my younger sibling, typical, and he would often not get to do a lot of things because my parents had to drive me an hour and a half away to and from Children's Hospital to get care and treatment. Or I would be so sick, he needed to stay home and help take care of me so he couldn't go to the football game or he couldn't be in the extracurriculars. So it has fundamentally shaped our family dynamic, and years later, I'm now 30, he's 27. I told you guys I was 30, so if we could leave that in this room. I don't announce that to a lot of people just yet. Don't. Just believe that for now. But even now, years later, it has shaped our family dynamic in the way that we interact with one another and some of the stuff that we've had to learn to deal with as adults. We look at the family. That is not only the immediate family, which might be the parents or the guardians, but it's also the extended family. When we talk to a lot of the families, what we have found is in the beginning, when disability comes onto the scene, the family will often rally in the beginning. But then as time goes on and things maybe get more complicated and we realize, wow, this is not a sprint, this is a marathon, unfortunately what we often see is the extended family takes a giant step back. Now that is not always the case, but it tends to be far more typical than. So one of the things that we have noticed is we've heard great stories of a single mom who went to Respite. She'd been coming pretty regularly, and at Thanksgiving, you know, she seemed a little more rested than usual. And the family was asking her what was going on, and she let them know that she got connected at a church that was hosting Respite events. And she met people. She got invited to a small group. She had friends. She had people she could call even between events. And she was starting to have some life pour back into her. And what that did was she, without knowing it, became a witness for us, talking about, you know, these people were different. And the reason we're different is because we love Jesus. And so she unknowingly becomes a missionary on our behalf. And then the family gets curious about some of that. And we have seen some family members say, wow, I was a little convicted because if total strangers can rally around my daughter, I guess I could too. So it's a really cool discipleship opportunity for them. The volunteer, we just did a volunteer training for a church that's a partner church that's launching their event next week, and I told them, we fundamentally can't do the ministry without the volunteers. And so we have to remember as leaders, we're serving the volunteers as well. And at least at the Vineyard, we have a lot of folks who come to the Vineyard, and they maybe have not yet made a decision that Jesus is going to be their personal Savior. And so they're feeling Christianity and this Jesus thing out. And one of the ways they do that is by serving. And so I remind our volunteers, the person you're serving next to might not yet know Jesus. So keep that in mind when you're interacting with one another, let alone the kids. So we want to ask ourselves, what would make a volunteer most supported? I know I've been to things before where I volunteered somewhere, and I'd get there early, and it wasn't organized. They couldn't tell me exactly what they needed from me, and I felt kind of like I wasn't all that helpful at the end of the day, and that was really frustrating to me because I came there with a willing heart, wanting very much to help further their mission, and at the end of the day, I felt like I kind of just took up space. So we ask ourselves, if I were a volunteer, what would communicate the extravagant love of God to me? Well, God wants you to know that you are the church, you are the hope of the world, and He wants to use you in your giftings. So here's a way that we can kind of call some of those giftings out in you. Well, out of that came this awesome little set of documents. I'm a big details person, where we figured what would a volunteer want to know? Well, they want to know, where am I going, what will I be doing, and what are helpful hints to make sure that I'm successful. So we've now, 3 years into it at the Vineyard, every volunteer who ever comes to serve an event, they know they're going to get their volunteer role description, and it's going to tell them all that stuff. In the helpful hints, not only do we give them helpful hints for that night, we talk to them about taking this the second mile. Jesus tells us, if a Roman soldier asks you to carry his pack for a mile, carry it the second mile. And the whole reason we go the second mile is because that's when they might start to ask, why would you do this sort of thing? Well, I do it because God loves you and I love you, and this is a practical way for me to extend that to you. So we challenge them on, here in this context, taking respite the second mile looks like relational respite. It looks like at the end of the night, if you hit it off with this kid, asking the parents permission to keep their contact information and saying, can I come to their soccer game? Or can I come to their school recital? Or do you ever need a break at home so you can take a nap? That's what that looks like. So we're already setting our volunteers up to look at respite as not an end point. It's the beginning of a conversation. So we create these documents for them. We also look at the community at large. Some of the volunteers are not from the church at all. They maybe work for Hamilton County DDS, or they provide services themselves and they heard about the program. Well, we want to make sure that we're doing this with such a level of excellence that they feel comfortable having themselves be identified with the team. And so one of the things that's a high value to a lot of the professionals and families that we serve is using people first language. And people first language, a lot of people mistake it for politically correct. It's different. It's actually much easier to navigate and to remember. But the way that we train our volunteers is, you wouldn't say ADHD Harmony. You would say, my friend Harmony, who has ADHD. Instead of saying autistic child, I would say, I know a child with autism. Because we're talking about the person first and then using the descriptive language. And that's a much more honoring way to look at someone. I know I was very frustrated in my high school years when I was referred to as the special ed kid. I wasn't the special ed kid. I was a kid who happened to be in special ed, thank you very much, but I was a kid first. And I wanted people to identify me as that. I understood that they needed to know some other information to keep me safe, healthy, and doing well, but I wanted them to identify me as a person. So that's just a really practical thing that we try and constantly put out in front of our volunteers, and we have a lot of grace with that. We let them know that language patterns are things that we learn, and it's a habit, and so we might make mistakes on this, but our heart is to try and get it right, because we really want to make sure that we're communicating value to these families and to these individuals we're serving. So these are some kind of samples you guys can see. Now, another really cool thing, when we were looking at what would communicate, it's interesting how these will all feed into each other. You'll find as you start to brainstorm all of that, an idea for one area will actually be a great idea for the other area. And a good example of that is when we were brainstorming around the volunteer, because most of my people in my think tank, they could identify most with the volunteer who has no frame of reference for serving this population, what would I need to do? And one of the things that came out was, well, I know I don't need to know everything about every disability or every disorder that's out there, but I'd really like to be an expert with the one child I'm paired with. So we need to find a way for them to do that. So what we came up with was what we call our pre-event survey, where we ask the parents about 11 questions. Now, at no point do we actually ask for a specific diagnosis. The reason being is that we're not a clinical environment. We're not looking to treat anyone. I don't have to know that. I don't have to know that your child has autism to make sure that I'm connecting with them in a meaningful way. We ask the remaining questions in such a way that we know that maybe if they have a hard time transitioning, you let us know what we need to know. Do they have some behaviors that we should be aware of? Are there ways that we can redirect that? We've asked all the right questions to get you that information, but we've done it in such a way that it's not asking a parent to maybe speak something that they're not ready to say yet. I've known parents who've had a child with autism, and they've probably known in their heart that their child had autism for 7 years, but they're not ready to say it yet. And I don't need them to say it. It's in their time, and I want to give them space to be able to go through that process on their own. I just need them to let me know what I need to do to make sure that their child has a great time and feels like this is a positive place, because we want them to want to come back on a weekend and find out more about who Jesus is. So we ask them these survey questions. Our favorite question on here, which we've gotten the best feedback from, is here's your chance to dote on your great kids. Tell us the fun stuff, favorite hobbies, favorite friend, what did they do best? This info helps volunteers to break the ice. I tell my volunteers that this is one of the most important questions on here, because it helps you within moments to be able to connect with the child that you're serving, so that they can feel comfortable and feel like you've really taken the time to get to know them. Well, the funny thing is, this came about as a result of trying to figure out how to honor the volunteer. Parents love this. I had one parent who finished the survey, this was probably about 2 years ago, and she called me in tears and she said, I've never had anybody ask me to write down what my child is well, and what they like, and what their hobbies are. Nobody's ever asked if she had a hobby. And I said, well, that's actually what I'm most fascinated with. I want to know what she likes. I want to know what makes her tick. So that's been a really healing question for us to ask the parents. And all of this came about because we were actually trying to make the volunteer more comfortable. And as it turns out, it really made the family and the guests feel more comfortable, because the kids feel known when they get there. We also, now because we get their date of birth, we're sending them birthday cards with BoardMaker on there to be able to have a birthday card sent to you that you can read and understand. So there's a lot of cool things that come about from really thinking through it that way. Another thing you'll notice in there that hit kind of all of them was that we wanted to make sure that we were thinking through what would really help the children be able to communicate with us. Now, a lot of the kids that we serve, maybe they don't necessarily read, they may not be verbal, and they think through visual cognition. How many of you have ever heard of visual cognition? I will tell everyone right now, rush to the local Redbox at your McDonald's or Kroger and rent the movie Temple Grandin. It is a great, great $1 movie that will help you have a really solid frame of reference for how to relate to individuals who think visually. There's actually a great scene in the movie where Temple has gone to stay with her aunt and uncle who live on a farm. And her aunt is explaining the routine of the farm to her, because Temple needs to know exactly what to expect in order to feel really comfortable, which makes sense. And so she explained that in the morning, your uncle and I, we wake up with the roosters. So immediately the camera pans and you see a rooftop and there's a rooster crowing at the sun, and there's aunt and uncle sitting there crowing at the sun. And she just looks at her like, why would you do that? Because she takes it to mean that they're literally going to be up on the roof. So that's a movie that we've actually strongly recommended that our volunteers watch, just to have even more of a framework for how to best serve the student clever way. So what we did was we went to some professionals, again, trying to figure out how to build bridges with the community. We've seen the kids come in and they've got some cool little storyboards, and they've got pictures that they use in their therapy and to be able to improve and progress. And so we were wondering if you could create a communication key for us that has some simple images on there that we could put on the volunteer's name tag, so that if a child gets stuck and we don't know exactly what they want and they're frustrated, we can pull this out and say, can you point to what you would like to do? And we've got food, bathroom, games, movies, nurse, and quiet. My heart is so happy at these events when I see a teenager who's a volunteer who, can you show me what you want? And to watch the child immediately, oh, I want to do that. Because they're frustrated, because they're trying to communicate, and that could escalate and become a total meltdown, but we stop that meltdown right there and just said, just show me what you want. And we've communicated to that child, you know, we get that you think differently, and that's fantastic. So we want to make sure that we're thinking about that. So we've got these for each of our events. That has given us a lot of credibility with the professionals who said, wow, it's pretty impressive. We get the question all the time, is your planning team, are they therapists? Nope. They aren't. We came up with that because we just were observing what the kids coming in were dealing with. The other thing is the invitation. How many of you have ever heard of viral marketing? Okay, you've been a victim. I'll be honest, I hate to inform you. You've been virally marketed every time you go to a movie, flip through a magazine, watch television. Often in the grocery store, I actually knew someone from P&G, and her job was to recruit people to go into grocery stores and strike up conversations about the Swiffer to try and encourage other people to do it. Not a person who had a name tag on or anything, just going, you know what, I used this and it was great. That's viral marketing, where we look at where people naturally gather and we work in ways to plug what it is, whether it's a product or service, to promote it. Now, my background before I went into vocational ministry, was sales and marketing. And so I had lots of training to help separate you from your money so that you would buy my product or remodel with my company. And so when I went into full-time ministry, I thought, now why on earth would we not use that to try and better connect people with Jesus, with what we're doing in ministry? So let's look at ways that we can help spread the word and talk to them and invite them into these really cool things happening in the kingdom. And so one of the things, and if you have any friends who are in sales, they know that ABC is usually always be closing, because you want to close your deal. We say in ministry it's always be connecting. Wherever I go, whether I'm a ministry leader or a buddy who just happens to serve and is passionate about it, I want to always be connecting people with the really cool things that God is doing and that I'm a part of so I can invite them in. And so what we've done is we actually have taught all of our volunteers, you know, they call it their elevator pitch. Used to be in sales and marketing, they'd say if you ever get trapped in an elevator with somebody, the average elevator ride's about 2 minutes, and so you want to be able to cast vision in 2 minutes and get all the people in the elevator to think that they totally want to come along with you on whatever sales adventure you're on. When we first started some of our ministries, like the prom, for example, which is a large-scale respite evening for adults with special needs, and we did not have a lot of communication from our main stage to be able to spread the word. And we were having about 1,000 people over dinner, and we needed about 1,500 volunteers. And so we actually deployed viral marketing to spread the word. And we recruited 1,000 volunteers with only one announcement from the stage the week before. And by then, I had at least 800 of them. So what we did was we had t-shirts printed up. They had the prom logo on the front, and on the back it said, ask me about the prom with the website. And we had all of our volunteers, if they're on Team Big or if they're on the brief team, they know that their body is advertising space. They are a billboard on I-75. And they are at the church when other people are at the church. And so we have t-shirt schedules. And so we said, hey, you know what, for the 8 weeks leading up to the prom, I want you to be committed that every time you're on our campus, whether you're here for a midweek group or you're here on the weekend for celebrations, I want you to wear your prom shirt. I'm not asking you to stand on a street corner and yell at anybody. I just want you to wear your shirt. And the first week, people just kind of look like, oh, there's a bunch of people in those t-shirts. By week two, they're like, and they're still wearing their shirt. I wonder why they're wearing their shirts. By week three, they're in line. You could see my team with people in line going, what's the prom? Why are you still wearing that shirt? I've noticed you for 3 weeks in a row. And they would very quickly in 2 minutes be able to explain what it was and recruit them for something. We also have for our respite program, we have breathe respite shirts in the back say, are you breathing? If so, we need you. Because the whole reason we branded our respite breathe was because we wanted parents to have time to stop and take a breath. And we also wanted our volunteers to understand that if you are breathing, you are called to and qualified for ministry. And so all you need to have is a willing heart, and we'll give you all the other tools. So they'll wear their shirts, and people will ask if I'm breathing. That's a weird thing to put on there. And then our folks know how to explain. Well, I do this really amazing outreach where we throw a party for families of children with special needs, make sure that the parents can go out having a great time, and we just hang out with the kids. Would you like to come and join me next time? And that's how we've grown our volunteer pool, which has been really cool. We also, on the RSVP, like I said, with the buddy breakdown, we have very specific questions that we ask, which you can see in the samples, because we want to make sure that we have all the right information to keep everyone safe and to fully engage with the children and the families for the event. And then a privacy covenant. Now, legally, because of the separation of church and state, we are not legally bound by HIPAA, but we tell our volunteers we are biblically bound by HIPAA. And so we ask them to sign a privacy covenant saying that they will not speak about the child they've been paired with outside if they have questions or anything, that they would come directly to one of the leadership team to get more information, that they would not be gossiping about the family. Because the way that this could look is I'm in line at McDonald's, and you know, it's the bridge. Oh, that poor dear Sue, you know, she has that little Tommy, and oh, we're praying for him. But you know, Tommy, he's aggressive. And you're in line at McDonald's, and you may not know that Tommy's aunt's right behind you and doesn't appreciate you talking about Tommy like that. That's not honoring. McDonald's is not the place that we talk about Tommy. If you're really worried about Tommy and Tommy is having some problems with aggression, we have trainings around that to make sure that Tommy's feeling safe and secure and engaged so that he doesn't escalate his behavior. So we just want to make sure that we eliminate those, oh, let me tell you about sweet, sweet Johnny conversations. So we really value having our volunteers look at that. And they realize that communication and that we're doing this really well, and so we want you to be on board with us. Now, the event-based model typically is viewed as being large scale. Part of the reason that we encourage the event-based model of Key Ministry, we have found, we have about 14 churches up in our network in Cleveland. We have 8 in the Cincinnati area that are somewhere in the pipeline, and we have some in Florida and Georgia. But what we have found is, in the beginning, when I came on the Key Ministry team, I kept telling them how great respite was. And they said, well, that might be a lot for somebody to take on if they don't have their Sunday morning program up and running yet for the kids. And I said, well, it's that whole question of which came first, the chicken or the egg. There is no right or wrong method. But what we have found in the churches that we've launched with Even if they didn't have a Sunday morning ministry yet, the respite kind of does a good job of, you know, you rip off the band-aid and suddenly everyone becomes much more aware. Like for instance, for us at the Vineyard, we had started kind of soft launched Breed Respite before we ever had our first prom. And even though Breed Respites are big events by most standards because they involve 100 people or so, it wasn't big enough to get the attention of the greater community like the big church. And so when we host a prom for 1,000 adults with special needs and have about 1,500 volunteers there, all of a sudden 1,500 volunteers have had a positive experience where they have become aware of the single most unchurched people group in the globe, and they realize they don't need a passport to be missional, they don't need to go far away to be able to make a really meaningful difference in the life of an individual, and suddenly they want to know, they're more open to finding out about the Bridge Builders program that happens on Sunday morning, or the Breathe Ongoing Respite that happens 8 times a year, or the Circle, which is our Sunday morning option for adults with cognitive disabilities. So the event-based thing might feel in the beginning like, oh gosh, that's an awful lot to take on. But part of what it does for you is it creates a big splash and it gets people talking about what the ministry is and how they can get connected. Now, there are also some of my favorite respites are the more what we call relational respite, which organically is often developed. And that comes from being intentional about relationships. I know in a lot of the other workshops they talk about just being aware of families who are in our midst who might need help ironing, or might need someone to come mow the yard or watch the kids for a few hours, where we try and encourage through our event model, we actually strongly encourage the relational respite piece because we tell people the event is great and that creates a fun night for mom and dad. But I'm sure, you know, the host will tell you that fundamentally will not change their life one night a year. It just won't. And when I read scripture, God's all about radically changing our life. He wants us to live in real community where we have a network of people who care about us and are gonna help us figure out the tough things. And so we tell people, if you really want to be a revolutionary, if you really want to change the world, definitely come serve with us at Breed Respite. We love to rally together. But the real life change happens in relationships when you're committed and have connected with a family for the long haul. So we really try and encourage both models. Now, I've worked with some smaller churches that maybe their facility is not accessible, and so they don't feel comfortable hosting an event because they would feel horrible, you know, if a child came and their wheelchair didn't fit through the door, there was no ramp. So instead of doing an event, what they did was they really spent some time pairing families up with a small group or a men's group or a women's group and just love attacking that family and saying, hey, you know what? My friends and I, there's 7 of us, we're a small group of women and we have availability on Wednesday's afternoons and that's your time. So we're gonna come and we're gonna, like a plague of locusts, we're gonna do your laundry, we're gonna mow the lawn because, you know, some of us women can mow. And we're going to make some meals and freeze them for the next week. And you're going to go take a nap or leave the house. And we're going to play with the kids. And we're going to make sure you have a great time. That is just as meaningful for that family as if they got to come to an event. Now, part of what we like about the event thing, too, is that we know from talking to our kids that a lot of our kids are never invited to a party. And that is fundamentally not okay. They should get to come to a party where they have lots of cool activities for them to engage in. And a party might look very different for them. We, when we do our events, we actually have a section called the low-no zone, which stands for low to no stimulus. One little boy that we serve, and his idea of a rockin' Friday night is sitting in a room of total silence. I also know some adults who that's their idea of a rockin' night, and so I pair them up together, and they're in the no zone. He stays there the entire time, and he tells his mom all the time that is his favorite party to go to. Now, I always tell the volunteers it's all about casting vision, because for him, that's a rockin' Friday night. And you might be a volunteer who really likes quiet, so there's a place for everyone. Now, the low zone, we have some kids who come in, and because we have lots of different things for them to do, they might get a little overstimulated. It's a new environment, and sometimes when I get overstimulated, I might get loud. That's not uncommon. And so I need to go to a quiet space, and often they will self-direct and say, I want to go somewhere quiet. And we'll take them to the quiet space. Well, if I take a child who's already loud and throw them in the quiet space with a child who can't handle it, that's like throwing a stick of dynamite into a bucket of gasoline. Typically not a good idea. So what we do is we take them to an area where it's quiet, but it's okay that they can, you know, still be, I just need to yell for a minute, you know, get it out, let them calm down, and then if they still need more silence and less stimulation, then we can transition them over to the no zone without disrupting the other kids there. Those are all little things that we've learned because we're part of a network that as we all do it, you come up with best practices really quickly. So that's been really cool for us to be able to use all those different kinds of respite together. When we look at having a respite, we look at experience design. We look at experience design and want to make sure we're setting the all parties up for being successful. So that's where we look at the low-no zone. We look at what kind of activities we have available. We don't want to have, we're a sugar-free environment. We don't allow any sugar We serve cheese pizza and sugar-free lemonade, and it cannot be pink lemonade. I had one well-meaning volunteer who picked up pink lemonade once because she thought that would be more fun. A lot of our kids can't have red dye. So it's little things like that that we look at, really, you know, streamlining all of that. Go ahead.
What do you do about the people who have kids in the autism spectrum who are doing the gluten-free business?
We actually will just go ahead and on one of the pre-event survey questions is we let them know what the menu is. And we say, if your child can't eat this, please pack them a dinner, which most parents are thrilled to do. And they're used to doing it anyways, because it's only been recently that restaurants have started to offer a gluten-free. Like, if you go to Chicago Pizza right now, who knows, they now have a gluten-free menu. That's a new trend. So we have them bring lunch. And that's, again, information that the buddy is briefed on so they know not to give them cheese pizza. We have found cheese pizza is really the most universally forgiving thing, because we have had churches. We had some churches in our Cleveland market who tried to have a gluten-free diet across the board. And like the two kids who were on the gluten-free diet would eat it, but the other kids were like, what is that? I'm not eating that. So we found that that was the best way to do it, and we've gotten really good feedback from the parents. They don't want that at all. Now, the takeaway for you guys, and I'm going to open it up to questions, is part of what has been really fun for us is Brief Respite at the Vineyard is an extension of a much broader network. Jenna Kunsu is going to be presenting with me today as a part of our network. We've got churches, as I said, in Cleveland, Cincinnati, Georgia, and Florida that are part of the Free Respite Network. And what that is several of us were in an office once at the Vineyard, and my boss got a really cool email from a single mom who had an awesome time at Free, and she was talking about how great it was, and so they're all celebrating. And I apparently looked a little peeved. And she said, well, what's the matter? This is great. And I said, yeah, I mean, it's great for one time, but it's not fundamentally going to change your life. I don't want to change your life. She was like, okay, well, tell me, what was that look like? I said, well, I think we should work smarter, not harder, and we're not the Vineyard, we're the kingdom. Like, there are churches all over the place who love Jesus and love the city, and what if we just all work together and said, we're just going to handle it? That this whole 85% divorce rate is not God's best for these people, and so we're just going to draw a line in the sand and say, you know what? We're just going to take care of it. We're going to make sure that every family is supported, that every Friday night in the tri-state there is a respite option somewhere if they want to go there. And so she is very amazing and awesome and gracious and said, all right, Army, figure it out. And so we bought the rights to the website freerespite.com, which if you go there now, there's a bumper page. So it's just holding space because it'll go live in April. And we were very intentional when we had the graphic designers. Again, you know, excellence is really important to us. We had the graphic designers do all the branding. And at no point will you see a picture where you can overtly tell if the child has an eating. One of the things we've tried really hard to train around is that you can't always tell by looking. One of my favorite quotes, we interviewed a parent from Key Ministry, and she said, you know, the trouble for me has been that Christians think they can tell where a disability ends and bad parenting begins, and that's why I want nothing to do with any of them. And we thought, wow, that is a wonderful statement. Like, that's very accurate. And, you know, we had another parent who said, my child has ADHD, he's not in a wheelchair, and he doesn't technically have a disability by most people's standards, but I have not been able to sit down since 4 a.m. this morning, and it's 11 p.m. So we were really intentional about the branding, that it was very ambiguous on purpose, because you just can't tell, because they're just people like us. And so what this does is, with the Free Respite Network, we have gone to churches, and, you know, my marketing background, if you ever stay at a Marriott hotel, they talk about you want to eliminate the no. Eliminate the reason why someone will tell you that they wouldn't want to stay at the Marriott. And so if it's, oh, you want free breakfast, well, what if breakfast wasn't an issue? Tell me no again. Well, I want a certain kind of comfort. Okay, well, if that wasn't the issue, tell me no again, until they have no tangible reason to say no. And so what we did was we interviewed a lot of the different churches and said, okay, well, I've told you about respite. Sounds cool, right? Yeah, sounds great. Well, why wouldn't you do it? Well, we can't do it because of this, this, and this. And so we built all of our materials around what they were fearful that they wouldn't have the resources for. And so what we've come up with is a series of planning documents that tell them the timeline of what you need to do, how many weeks out, how do you market it internally and externally. There's Jenna. How all the training materials in terms of how do you create a buddy breakdown sheet, what questions do you ask, all that good stuff. That is all available now. We've been doing what we call a soft launch of the network in terms of before the site goes live in April, we didn't want the site to go live and there's one church on there, because that's not a network, that's just a church with a website. So we've spent the past year and a half recruiting churches, getting them up and running so that they have, you know, all their systems in place. They've built a good pool of families who have given them feedback so that they make sure that everything's going well. And then the really exciting thing is that the IT piece is the number one thing. Most churches say, I don't have access to a database where a parent could log in and we would be able to get their information. And so we had a couple of volunteers who are professional IT developers, and they've spent the last year developing the website. And so the way that it will work once it's up and running is parents would go into freerespite.com and they'd create a profile for each of their kids. Right now, unfortunately, our folks have to answer the survey for every child every single time they come, and that's a bummer. But when the new site is up, they will be able to create a profile, and then they can search by zip code, or state, or church, if they want to look for a Catholic church. The rule is they have to be a Christ-honoring church, that's it. And then they can find events in different areas, and then they register online. And so we've streamlined that whole process with the great hope that, like if you and I, for example, leave here today and I go to Target and Mason, and then I find myself in Florence and I go to Target again, I'm going to have pretty much the same experience. It might be set up a little bit different, but I know I can expect certain things. Our big dream is that we would have every Friday in every city covered all over the place, and that if a family was ever traveling out of town, they could put in a search for a zip code and they could find a respite in that area, and they could go knowing that the same level of care is available to them. So we have all the training materials and resources available if you knew of a church that wanted to start that program. Do you guys have any questions?
Sure.
Since I talked to everything.
Here's this. You guys want to see the
streaming
stuff? Can you give us copies of these?
If you email me, I can give you, I can send you actually a CD-ROM that has all that on there.
That would be great.
My email address is hhensley, that's H-H-E-N-S-L-E-Y, at vineyardcincinnati.com. And what we do, instead of emailing you the files, if I email to you, it'd be like 50 million emails. They're organized on the CD-ROM by folder, and there's actually, when you open it up, it'll say, read me first, and it's the first document. It tells you what order to open them so that you can have it. And then what we do is Key Ministry provides quarterly respite trainings in the Cincinnati area, in each of the markets. And what we do with those, we also have a launch training, which is tailored to your church, where since I live here, we can do them pretty much any time. If they're included, I have to coordinate when I'm going there. Where I come to your church and I do a specific launch training with your volunteers and your leaders to help them get on board and understand what everything is, and we help you with your launch. And then we do require that all the churches who are partner churches in the Free Respite Movement have signed a covenant agreeing to certain things, that we all agree we'll use people first language, that we are all Christ-honoring churches. We actually, the night of the respite, don't use any religious curriculum because we've created as a seeker-sensitive place. The reason we do that is because by doing so, the county boards of DDS, which is the government entity that provides services to families, will actually promote it for us. Now we tell them, if parents come and ask us why we're doing it, game on, we will tell them it's because Jesus loves them, and they were totally fine with that. So we've been able to get secular organizations to actually promote our ministry for us, and then the families come, and of course, we always have conversations about who Jesus is. And then the biggest thing is that we have either the outreach pastor or the children's pastor and the executive pastor or senior pastor have to sign off on it, because we want them to realize if you host this event, you must understand that these families might actually just have the audacity to show up on Sunday morning, and you need to be willing to figure out what that looks like. It doesn't mean you have to have the program all figured out. You just have to have space where you're willing to help walk that journey out with them, because the last thing we want is them to have a great experience at a respite and then they show up on Sunday and told they're not welcome, which unfortunately has happened. Not since 1990, but I talked to some people in Minnesota that were turned away. So we've got all those materials for you. And I'm happy to meet with people. I meet with people at Panera's all the time to kind of go over this stuff in more detail, because it's a lot of information. But I hope what you take away is that whether you choose to do a more relational respite that's more organic, like ironing, and I love that. I hate ironing. Or the event-based model, they are both very, very doable, regardless of the size or scope of your ministry. So,
can you repeat the part you said about the launch, the training, and help?
Yes. What you do is you contact me. I will initially send you, a CD-ROM so you have the files, and then I usually will meet with a church representative one-on-one at first, just to kind of figure out, what level of interest they have. So that they can fully understand what all that training looks like, what the timelines look like. I kind of walk you through that. They usually go back to their senior pastors or leadership team, figure out if they're really in. Once they are, then they contact me, and I set up a launch training where I come and train their leaders. We've done launches a couple different ways. I've done them when I launched the Whitewater Church in Cleves. We did a launch training where they just went ahead and had their leaders and as many volunteers who were interested to get trained. First, the leaders got trained, and then the leaders came back with their volunteers and got trained again. So they did two trainings before the first one, which is fine. The folks at Seven Hills in Florence that are launching next week, we did a training Thursday night, and we're going to do a second one next Wednesday. So sometimes it looks like two trainings just because of availability of volunteers. Then I help them through their first event. As much as possible, I like to go to the first events just because I'm a junkie for this stuff. It's just amazing to see how excited people get. The families love it. The kids love it. So I'm kind of addicted, so I usually will offer to go if they would like me to their first event, and I help them kind of troubleshoot some things. And then beyond that, we tell them it's up to them if, you know, how frequently they want to do it. Like Seven Hills has committed. They decided they're going to take the first year, they're going to do two in the year, and then they want to build from there. The Vineyard started, we did three a year, then quickly went to eight a year, because we found that for us, we were able to support that number. And for us, if they were too far apart, it was actually harder to recruit the volunteers because they forget. Because there's so many other things competing for their attention. Some of my churches up in the Cleveland area do it 11 months out of the year. They just don't do it in December. So there's lots of different options.
One more. Once you get families interested in coming to the church, mm-hmm. how do you have suggestions that you can give us for how to incorporate those children into the Sunday school program?
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of inclusion, but I also know that I have served some families who their child doesn't want to be included with everybody in the entire thing because they freak them out. So we kind of have an integrated approach. Like at the Vineyard, we have an inclusion option, but we also have a bridge builder's room. Some of the kids don't like to go to the other classrooms. It's too stimulating, no matter what we try and do to make it, you know, a little less overwhelming. But I strongly recommend buddy systems, where we recruit a specific individual who agrees to come at the same time each week that child comes. We've also done it where maybe that volunteer can't come every week, but they could come every other week, and so I pair them up with another volunteer, and maybe one of them takes first and third, second and fourth, and they communicate really well with the family to make sure that the child knows who to expect.
Okay, that's what I do at our church now, but also, for example, age-wise, you know, sometimes their behavior is inappropriate for their age level,
mm-hmm.
and so they are incorporated with that group, but they stand out so much.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have suggestions about
There's
that?
A couple of things. We do some targeted trainings. Key Ministry has done several trainings on behaviors for us and helping to be able to manage behaviors and sometimes redirect behaviors. We've also done some trainings where we've done awareness for the other kids in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's actually a really cool opportunity for us to teach, to model inclusion, where we have open dialogue with the kids, maybe not with that child present, to make sure we honor them, but say, hey, we want to talk about the fact that we're all made differently. And so sometimes, even though we're not allowed to do this and Jimmy does this, here's what we're doing to help Jimmy start to understand that we shouldn't do that. And so it's an opportunity for us to teach the other kids and invite them into the conversation with us. Some of what I love, when I led the ministry at Crossroads on the weekend, we had one little boy who, if he became overstimulated, he was verbal, but if he became overstimulated, he just mentally shut down. And he had self-mutilating behavior, which could be very scary for the other kids and for the volunteers, and scary for him because he was upset. And he, you know, we worked with mom and found out he had a behavior plan. And so the way his behavior plan worked was when he'd start to have those behaviors, you would say, Chad, you have a yellow light. And I'm not kidding you when I say, he would almost stop down his tracks and say, I have a yellow light, I have half an hour. And he knew that if he repeated the behavior in the next 30 minutes, he escalated to a red light and then his behavior plan was enacted. I was a direct care provider for this little boy for a year and a half in home. And in the year and a half I worked with him, we only had to escalate to red two times. It was heartbreaking. But part of what was neat was as we did that, the other kids started to understand, well, look, now Chase is happier. And so there would be times where we would be in the room and Chase would start to get frustrated. And one of the other kids would say, Chase, I know you're frustrated, but you have a yellow light. But I'm going to sit with you for a half an hour. That is the win. That is the win. That is how we raise a generation of folks who are fully inclusive. And so we really encourage taking time to stop the programming and educating the kids in the class, because that is how we prevent bullying and separating the kids out. So we do sometimes take the opportunity to stop and do some training. Now, if he becomes a danger to himself or others, we have a plan that we enacted. Okay, we're gonna take you to a quiet room, let you calm down. We just had an incident, actually a brief respite at the Vineyard a few months ago, where we had a young man come, and he escalated pretty quickly and was no longer safe for himself or for the other folks around him. We had professionals there who were helping him, and we called mom and, you know, asked what she needed us to do, and at a certain point she actually asked us to call the police, which was not something that I enjoy, something I take lightly, but it was the most honoring thing I could do for him in that moment. And the squad came and took him to Children's, and he got the help that he needed, but it went well, if I could say that, because our volunteers had all been trained on behavior management, even though they weren't professionals, they knew, okay, he need quiet. Oh, he's continuing to escalate. We don't talk now. We stop talking because that's just going to upset him more. They knew how to get into another area. The really neat thing was that there were over 100 people in the building that night, and there were only 7 people that knew the incident occurred because of the way that they were able to kind of transition somewhere else.
I raised that child.
Yeah.
But also, what do you think that the children should be immersed and included in their own peer group? That's what I see differently. I'm not sure I agree with not doing that, which I'm seeing happen.
You agree with not putting them in the peer group?
I think they should be.
I agree.
Okay.
I've had to have some tough conversations with parents who might not agree with me. For instance, I had a mom call me once who, her son was 36 years old, but she said developmentally was 2 years old, so she wanted to know if she could put him in the nursery on Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
And I explained that that's not appropriate. He's a man. And so we can work with you to make sure that he can come on Sundays and that you can enjoy worship and that sort of thing, but that's not a precedent that we want to encourage there. We've also had, I had our age range for pre-respite is birth through 18. Now, typically we find most of the kids who come are between age 2 and 12. But we had a young woman come who was 17, and her mom said, developmentally, she's probably at third grade level. And they came on the weekend, and she wanted her 17-year-old to go to the children's ministry. And we said, well, that's not an option we would like to work with. So often it's an opportunity for us to walk through the parents through it's a new chapter to figure out what does that look like. You know, we say, hey, we are for your child. We want her to be here, very much so. And we want her to have a meaningful interaction, but we really want her to get some peers who know her and are friends with her. Now, we also realize, though, spiritually, you know, my pastor's heart is, I want her to understand who Jesus is. And I also understand that sometimes the way the programming is developed in our student union, it is above her head, and she's not going to catch all of it. So we work together with the family to figure out how do we help equip mom and dad and maybe a small group leader to make sure that she has what she needs to make sure that it's relevant to her. It's all very much a balance. I got some heat just in the past couple of weeks. Our adult ministry, I know we've got to stop here. Our adult ministry, we just launched it a month ago, called The Circle. It meets during our 10:15 service on Sundays. And it's a place where adults with disabilities can come and hear the gospel message presented in a way that's relevant to them. Well, we don't have adult Sunday school at the Vineyard. It's just not the way the culture is set up. We do small groups. Well, my husband and I did pilot a small group in our home for young adults with cognitive disabilities, and though we made some great friends, it's very difficult logistically to do. Our house is not accessible. I can't afford to make it accessible. Transportation was an issue, so we would only get to spend about 45 minutes together as a group because it would take us almost 3 hours on the front and back to get everyone to and from where they need to be. So it really wasn't ending up being as meaningful an experience as they would like. So what we did was on Sunday, at the Vineyard, which is accessible. We have restroom facilities that are accessible. They can get into the building. We use Friendship Ministries curriculum, which is nationally recognized curriculum for adults. And we provide we're building a team of one-on-one mentors with the great hope that they'll come. That's kind of their small group experience. And then they go to celebrations together and meet some other people. And I had some professionals who challenged me on that and said, well, you're supposed to be the inclusion champion and it feels like you're separating them out. And I said, my argument is that it is dishonoring and disrespectful for me as a pastor to not create space for them to come and ask real questions about the gospel in a way that's relevant to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect that from everyone else. Everyone else gets to go to a small group or can go to Alpha or can go to a birth and healing class. If I'm not offering that same level of ministry, then it's not okay. So
I'll give you a great support for that.
Okay.
I have a daughter who's now in her 30s, but she's dyslexic and has ADD.
Mm-hmm.
When she was in the 7th grade, we moved and she had to change schools. Mm-hmm. She'd been in a parochial school before that for through 6th grade, and she was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
She did get some support, but she didn't qualify for assistance.
Right.
You know, and when we moved, they decided, after we spoke, they put her in what they called their intervention class for children they thought would succeed but needed extra help.
Mm-hmm.
She bloomed. Mm-hmm. She came out in the first week and it changed her life. She said, Mom, they like me. It's the first time she felt like that. That's what I think we need to try to give.
Absolutely, absolutely. I tell my volunteers, this will be a great ministry for you. You will get far more out of it than you give. And it teaches us all about acceptance. Because isn't that what we all want? Like, I want to go somewhere where someone's going to love me for who I am and all my junk and work with me on it,
mm-hmm.
do life with me. I don't need somebody to come slap a bunch of stereotypes and labels on me that
Yeah, she was with her peers too. She wasn't with younger children. I find where I am, I'm not complaining because I don't understand what to do either. But I don't think it's very helpful to put a sixth grader in with a third grader.
But it's going to take it's a cultural shift. It's going to be a thing that our country has to work on as a whole, because if we want to see a future where adults with special needs have friends all across the country, we have to make some conscious decisions to do the hard work of figuring out what that looks like. It doesn't mean we know all the answers. It doesn't mean we always get it right. Let's be clear, because we screw things up too. And at the same token, we also have to be sensitive too. I was at a national summit last April, and this girl got up, and I just so appreciated her heart. She has profound cerebral palsy, but developmentally is brilliant. Takes her a little while to talk, so you have to just be patient and let her get her words out. And she said, "I don't always want to be in your inclusion ministry, but sometimes that is the only place I want to be, because I want to be with people like me. I don't want to hear you complain about your job because I can't get one, and it hurts my feelings to listen to you complain about what I can't have." And so she did such a good job of articulating, sometimes I want that and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I want to be with people who are just like me. So it's been a real cool thing to walk out. But we're done. We're just doing questions. So.
Thank you.
Hopefully that was helpful. Please don't hesitate to contact me if you ever have any questions. I'm more than happy to meet with people. That's kind of my favorite thing to do. So.